Meanwhile, an interview with Dan Jurgens, famed comic book writer and artist currently writing the 8-issue miniseries Blue and Gold. Hello, and welcome to a very special episode of the Justice League International Bwahaha Podcast, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. My name is the Irredeemable Shag, and I'm your host. Now, if you've been a devoted listener to this podcast, welcome back. And if you're new around here, welcome to the Embassy. For you new folks, each month on this podcast, we recap and discuss the Justice League comics released from roughly 1987 to about 1992, when the main writers were Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis. Now, we're going issue by issue, month by month, in release order, covering all the various Justice League series and all the spinoffs from that era. In each episode, I bring along some guests to help me cover the issues. Now, this ever-changing roster of guests includes different voices from either the podcasting community, fellow JLI fans, and even several comic book professionals. Now, we've been doing this for nearly 6 years, so we've covered through Justice League America issue number 42, Justice League Europe issue number 18, and Justice League Quarterly number 1. Now, while we spent all these years talking about old comics, it's also really exciting that DC Comics is currently publishing a brand new miniseries featuring the greatest bromance in comic history. That's right, Booster Gold and Blue Beetle are starring right now in an 8-issue miniseries entitled Blue and Gold. And here's the best part. Today, our guest to help us discuss the Blue and Gold miniseries is none other than the writer of the series, and also co-creator of Booster Gold, the man himself, Mr. Dan Jurgens. Now, before we get to the interview, we do need to take a second to thank our sponsors. Folks, this episode of the JLI Podcast is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 42% off with free shipping on orders of $50 or more. Now, each episode, I try to pick a collected edition from InStockTrades library that's sort of tied into the issue in some way. So today, I picked two volumes. Both are hardcovers featuring the original run of Booster Gold from 1986. So the first one's called Booster Gold, The Big Fall, which collects Booster Gold issues 1 through 12. That's the original series. And then the next volume is called Booster Gold Future Lost hardcover, and that one collects issues 13 through 25 and some of the other stuff related, like the stuff from Millennium, Action Comics, Secret Origins, stuff like that. So if you've ever wanted to read the original Booster Gold stories, where he was introduced, where Dan Jurgens first started the character off, all the history of Booster Gold is there, where he started. It's a great collection of stories, folks. Both are hardcovers, both written and drawn by Dan Jurgens. Can't beat that. So right now, they would normally cost you $39.99 a piece, but on in-stock trades, they're going for 42% off, so you can get each volume for only $23.19. That's a great deal. Those are some great comics and two wonderful hardcovers. So go out to In-Stock Trades and check that out, folks. We also need to take a second to thank you folks at home for helping support the show. This episode is sponsored in part with your Patreon support. Because, you know, running the Fire & Water Podcast Network with so many shows requires a lot of online hosting and other services. And a while back, we realized we needed some help with the expenses. So we launched a Patreon, and you folks really stepped up to help keep the network going. So if you're enjoying the JLI Podcast, the best way to support the show is by visiting our Patreon, which is patreon.com/FW podcast, and consider supporting the Firewater Podcast Network. And at certain tiers, you'll get mentioned on your show of choice, just like these folks who specifically asked to be recognized on the JLI Podcast. Our thanks to Bill Beer, Chris Lewis, David A. Gutierrez, DC Dave, Devin Clancy, George Van Note, Gord Tolton, John Ross Haynes, Kevin Wetter, Mark Baker Wright, Martin Gray, Matt Ev, Maxwell Traver, Michael Crouch, Michael Zomkowski, Patrick McMullen, Roger Priebe, Rudy Castillo, Sean Ross, and Tim Price. Again, folks, please visit our Patreon at patreon.com/FW podcast. Now, if you want to join in on the conversation, we want to hear from you, your thoughts on this interview with Dan. We want to hear your thoughts on the Blue and the Gold miniseries or anything about Booster and Beetle in general. So get on the social media, use our hashtag #FWpodcast. You can tag us at JLI Podcast. You can tag Dan Jurgens out there. That's in the show notes as well. So folks, we want to hear from you or leave your comments on the show post, which is on our website. Which is firewaterpodcast.com. That's where, honestly, most of the activity goes on, is on the show posts over there on our website. So, all right, with all that out of the way, I should probably tell you a little bit about our guest today, Mr. Dan Juergens. So Dan has written and drawn most every major title published by DC and Marvel Comics. He's probably best known for logging a 10-year run as the writer and artist on Superman, including the best-selling Death of Superman, for which he won the National Cartoonist Society Award for Best in Comic Book Division. Now, specifically addressing the featured characters of this podcast, back in 1986, Dan created the character of Booster Gold in his self-titled series that lasted for about 2 years. Dan has come back to the character over the years numerous times, including when he took over the Justice League America title right after Giffen and DeMatteis left the JLI. So this really gave Dan a chance to write both Booster Gold and Blue Beetle together. And then since then, Dan has continued to be associated with Booster across numerous titles, including Booster's second series that lasted from 2007 to 2011, and Blue Beetle was featured in that series some as well. Now, Dan's writing a brand new 8-issue miniseries entitled Blue and Gold alongside artist Ryan Sook. Now, issues 1 through 4 are on the stands right now. If you haven't checked out the new miniseries, you really, really should. And fair warning, we will be spoiling some minor plot points from the first 4 issues. So if you want, you know, maybe you read the first 4 issues first, then listen, or, you know, or just dive right in. I don't think we're spoiling anything too tremendous in our discussion. Now, over the years, I have been fortunate enough to sit down with Dan and interview him on topics like Firestorm and Aquaman. So it's been quite a while since we've done an interview together, so it was very exciting to get him back on the network. So and there's a lot more, obviously, to know about Dan Juergens, but you know what? I'm just going to let him speak for himself. Well, Dan, thank you so much for being here. It's been a few years since we've chatted, so I'm really excited about this opportunity.
It has been a few years. It's good to be back.
And what a great synergy here. I mean, we're doing a podcast all about, you know, the Giffen DeMatteis era of JLI. Blue and gold, front and center, you know, cracking jokes. I mean, this book is really in the spirit of it. So if you could, tell the folks at home, like, if for anyone who hasn't tried this book yet, the new one on the shelves, Blue and Gold, the 8-issue miniseries, how would you describe the miniseries to them?
I would describe it as a buddy film about a couple of guys who are out there doing what they can to make the world a better place, while at the same time having a little fun with the social media aspects of what we are as a country right now, and poking a little bit of fun at some of that, and also echoing some of those old beats of Justice League International and what it was all about back in those heydays of the late 80s, early 90s.
Well, I got to tell you, you've definitely captured the spirit with a modern contemporary flair. It's hitting all the right buttons for me. I'm absolutely loving it.
Good. Glad to hear it.
And in the spirit of that social media focus that you mentioned, I actually solicited some questions through social media from some past guests of this show to help me ask you. So my thanks to Paul Hicks, Sean Ross, Martin Gray, Dr. Ange, and Michael Bailey for their contributions to today's question. So if there's any question you don't like, Dan, it's probably their fault.
Got it. I will know who to blame.
So let's start off talking a little about Booster Gold. So you've got some history with the character, clearly. When you created Booster Gold, what was the spark? What was it that ignited the whole idea for the character? Like, what came first? Was it the name or the costume, the obsession with fame and fortune, or whatever?
Well, no, more of it was, if I were to say what came first, it really was a couple of things that based around this idea that at the time, so we're talking early mid-80s, media were changing, right? And we were seeing a change where all of a sudden, you know, like Entertainment Tonight was on the air. And there was this idea that the media were out there focusing more and more on celebrities, that now just being a celebrity was more and more of a thing. And quite honestly, what I had always thought is, as we saw more celebrities doing the endorsement thing, more athletes, whatever it might have been, why wouldn't a hero do that? Couple that with the idea that at that time, DC had this really wide open door to creators that basically said, if you have an idea, tell us about it. And so I had breakfast with Dick Giordano one morning, who was, you know, managing editor and I think VP at the time. And I just said, look, I have this idea and there's this character and he is out to promote himself and he is out there to make money doing that. Yes, he's doing, you know, heroic stuff. He is a hero trying to make up for mistakes from his past, but he is also doing what we see so many people around us doing right now, pushing things to the hilt, using the media as he possibly can, and endorsing products. And Dick would say, so he's a hero for hire? And I'd say, no. He's not that. He is not a hero for hire. He is a self-promoter and an opportunist, not necessarily in an evil way, but in a way that is certainly foreign to old world DC heroes, which at that time, never mind just Justice Society, that's really what Superman and Batman were too. So that's what it was all about. So, you know, creation is never a straight linear line. It's a process of, well, you get a little bit of the idea for the character and then a hint of what the name might be and a hint of what the costume might be. And then you revise it. And, you know, it's clay that you keep molding until you finally get it to where you want it.
It's just amazing that you tapped into that zeitgeist of celebrity news that early. Because, I mean, now we exist. That's the majority of the news. It's amazing that you were on it that early.
I mean, you know, there's no other better example right now than Britney Spears. I mean, if you look at the amount of attention that story has gotten, it's just mind-blowing to me. And it's clear that some people are really, really focused on it, which is fine. I'm not being critical of it. I am just saying you're right. And these are the things that get more and more of the attention now. And I really think Booster Gold fits the world of today even better than he did in the 80s. And I think in the mid-80s, he was ahead of his time. I think now it shows, and I think he's way, way ahead of his time. And I think the possibilities with the character now are greater than they ever have been. So, and all the world does is back up that opinion every single day.
I don't know that there's actually a question in this next statement, but that might sort of explain something that's been going through my head for a while, which is, if you look, let's say, post-crisis era, you know, if you will, that 1985 or whatever as your starting point, I think from DC Comics, Booster is probably the most successful, completely independent character that DC's produced. I mean, certainly Harley Quinn's massive, but she's derivative of the Joker. Booster is completely original, and I've racked my brain on this for a while. I can't think of a single DC character that is still around, that is still as prominent, that is that original since that time frame. And maybe it's the media piece that works.
That's probably true. I'd have to think about it to make sure, but I think you're right. And, you know, Harley, who's a great character, also had the advantage of debuting in animated television.
Yeah.
And has since, you know, been grown and stretched to a much greater degree. But yeah, also was in the world of Batman and derivative of the Joker to a certain degree. And then we have other characters. There have been some new additions of, you know, like some Green Lantern characters, but they are derivative.
Yep.
And I have always said that there is a clear line between taking something new, cutting from whole cloth and building your own cornerstone. And I think this is something that the DC and Marvel universes really lack right now. And just creating the 55th Robin, that, there has to be more to it than that. And so I think you're probably right. I wouldn't totally plant my flag there yet because I haven't thought it through. But yeah, I think you're right.
So I envision Dan's up at 3 a.m. tonight writing down lists of DC characters and going, nope, derivative. And I think you'll get there.
I may have to do that. Yeah, we'll see.
So obviously Booster's been around for a long time. So one of the questions that came up was like how the work of other writers and artists on Booster Gold have affected your approach to the character. Like most notably the Giffen DeMatteis JLI era. I mean, they really did some different stuff with Booster, and then the weekly series 52. Like how has other writers and artists informed your opinion on writing Booster?
Well, you know, everything is part of the tapestry. And so when I think back to Justice League, you know, when one day the phone rang and Andy Helfert was on the phone, who was the editor at the time. And he said, hey, you know, we're kind of thinking we might want to put Booster in the Justice League. Will you have any problem with that? And at that time, the book wasn't even out yet.
Right.
I knew they were doing a new Justice League book. I knew Keith was doing it. Beyond that, I knew a little bit about what the cast was going to be. I knew it was interesting to me that they were putting Captain Marvel in it, but I didn't know necessarily exactly what the vibe of the book was going to be. And so Andy was explaining it to me on the phone, and I thought it sounded pretty cool. But he said, yeah, we want to make him part of it. We think it can be this thing that he fits in really well. The book is going to have a humorous tone to it and all that. And I said, well, you know, I love everybody who's involved with the book in terms of their creative talents. So yeah, by all means, go for it. And what we quickly latched on to was this thought process where, you know, Keith's whole thing as a creator is often to say, I'm going to break it. And I'd say, well, just don't go too far, okay? So I always looked at that as Earth Keith. But at the same time, I think what he did was he really started to set up this idea of a relationship between Ted and Booster. that became something that we would all be able to play with many years later and throughout the years, that I think was really good, because that's something that always works in comics. You know, we think of the best relationships in comics. And in the 60s at DC, it was Flash and Green Lantern, right? Mm-hmm. And then in the 70s, it became Green Lantern and Green Arrow. And in a way, those are buddy films on paper. And in a way, that's how I have always seen Blue and Gold, is let's do a buddy film and put it on paper. And so they clearly helped build a lot of that. Then moving into 52, where they at first, you know, sort of killed Booster, only to reveal him again as something else. And what I appreciated about that is, if you go back to the end of Booster Gold Volume 1, his very last issue, which I think was 25, you know, we make it clear on the last couple of pages that there's a much bigger role for Booster to play in the DC universe, that because of his awareness of time travel and everything else, that he was going to be something of a game changer. So in 52, if he ends up saving the multiverse and becomes the greatest hero you never heard of, so much the better. I mean, that... they took what I had set up and definitely elevated it, which is what we should all do with characters that we write, you know, is elevate the work of those who came before.
So do you find yourself enjoying reading what other people are writing Booster?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's fun to see them use the character. It's fun to have them find, you know, different things to say about the character and to play up some of what I did. And to keep the character going, because, you know, overall, I do think he's been underused, certainly underused in the world of wider media compared to his potential. So, yeah, by all means.
So you mentioned the greatest hero that you never heard of. So that era in 52, and then the ongoing series that you were part of as well, that Geoff Johns was in and things like that as well. So the behavior we're seeing in the current Blue and Gold series seems like a bit of a departure from that whole repairing the time stream sort of thing. So as far as you're concerned, is that chapter, the greatest hero never heard of Booster's life, is that chapter closed for right now?
I wouldn't say it's closed at all. In fact, by the time we get to the end of the miniseries, we will be introducing a couple of things that imply there's room for us to explore it later. You know, we have a lot of changes out there right now, and I don't know that we will get to do a follow-up to this series. Ryan and I would both like to, but obviously there have been a lot of changes at DC in the past year or so. So, and then you add this thing called a pandemic to the entire publishing world. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, certainly I think there's another story to be told, and one that starts to get into a few of those things.
Man, a Booster and Beetle road trip through time would be amazing. Just saying.
Yeah, there's time. There's the multiverse. There are so many different things out there to have fun with. And I think what I really wanted to do in this one is give them the chance to plant their flag in this idea of how they would fit in the DC universe right now, where you have Blue and Gold. It's out there as Blue and Gold Restoration. It's out there as a service to people who need help. And you'll see more of that in oncoming issues. And at the same time, you know, set the table for something bigger that could come later.
I can't wait to see how it's going to unfold. Now, in full disclosure for you people at home, Dan and I are recording this prior to issue number 4 coming out. So by the time this interview comes out, you guys will have all had a chance to read number 4. So you guys are more in the loop than I am at this point. So
yeah, you'll have access to that tomorrow or Wednesday, depending on, you know, where you get your books and how you do things. So yeah, it's on the doorstep.
Let's talk a little bit about Blue Beetle. So what was your first exposure to Ted Kord? And what were the stories that made you realize like that there's something here, that this character is pretty cool?
Well, okay. So I'm old enough that my first exposure to Blue Beetle was, you know, reading the Steve Ditko version of the character for Charlton Comics.
Okay.
And I really, really liked that. And this idea that, you know, he flew around in this bug and Ditko had it all figured out, where the trapdoor would open up underneath and he'd lower himself down and everything like that. And he would draw these crazy fight scenes that only Ditko could do. And it sort of had just a little bit of a Spider-Man vibe to it. And I just found him to be an interesting character. And I only had like 2 issues, right? But it was enough to spark my interest, so that later then, when he came to DC, I thought, oh, that's great. I want to see a DC Blue Beetle. I think that the Charlton version was a little bit more mysterious. So if you go back to what I was doing with him in the Justice League when I was writing and drawing that, I actually push him a little bit back toward the Charlton version. I always kind of liked those triangular goggles that Ditko gave him, as opposed to the bubble goggles.
Okay.
Like he first got with DC. But I always kind of liked that bit about Ted. And I also made him a little bit more reserved than what Mark and Keith had done with him in Justice League. That to me, you know, he's a bit more of a recluse, you know, more likely to isolate himself in the lab and just wanting, that's his happiest spot to me. So I wanted to play that up a little bit. And I continued some of those overtones into the current series.
I can definitely see some of that. He's a lot of time in his lab as he's dealing with the fallout of what's going on with Court Industries. I mean, yeah.
Right.
So Ted's very different from Booster, obviously. Like, what do you use personally to key into Ted's personality when you're trying to write him, whether it's dialogue or action or whatever? Do you have like a, I don't know, something that you think of when you're thinking of Ted?
Yeah, I think they have to be different characters. I think if you're going to have two guys, you know, standing next to each other, they have to be a little different. If you go back to the classic Green Lantern, Green Arrow stuff, you know, one was a liberal, one was a conservative. Somehow they managed to get along, unlike the world of today, and work things out, which just shows you the beauty of the series. But, you know, you have to have them be a little bit different. And what I use as a little bit of atmosphere here is the Hope Crosby road trip films, where I think you can look at one and say, okay, Ted is a little bit more Bing Crosby, Booster is a little bit more Bob Hope. And you can still have that sense of humor going with both these guys. But if you look at it, they're a little bit different. Certainly one of them more reserved, one of them playing the role somewhat of the straight man. You know, Booster is the one who always wants to charge in headstrong, big opinion. Hey, I got this, no problem. Ted's the one who is more likely to hold back. And I think in the first issue where Ted, you know, wasn't ever going to tell Booster that he wasn't invited into the Justice League while he himself was. I mean, there's their relationship in a nutshell. That's how they function. Ted is the responsible one. Ted is the one who keeps it alive because Booster can be so careless. You know, he would have gotten them both atomized by now.
Well, I wanted to ask about that. So in issue one, when the Justice League does invite Beetle to join, but not Booster, it's an uncomfortable moment. Mm-hmm. And Batman specifically does not say a single word. In fact, there's a panel just focusing on his silence. And I was just curious, you know, that maybe that was you, maybe that was Ryan, I'm not sure. But was that like Batman's silence? Was that just typical Batman brooding? Or was that supposed to be some like emotion that Bruce was going through due to his old allegiances from Justice League International with Booster and Beetle?
No, I think, it's really what it is whether it was in Booster Gold Volume 2 or going back to the JLI days, Batman sees the worth in these guys that the others don't see. Mm-hmm. So Batman being Batman, who I always have seen as being the one who would stand more quietly in the room, because I've always seen Batman as a loner and not as head of Team Batman family. Mm-hmm. But that's where he doesn't agree with everybody else's opinion. He stands there and he's quiet. And we'll come back to that at some point in the series here. But I think that to me is how what you see is Batman not agreeing with the others. He sees the value that both these guys have, especially Booster, because Booster is the one who wasn't invited. He had just dealt with Booster in his own book. And so I think that this is really consistent with Batman and his adventures with them in the past. And at the same time, you know, Batman not arguing with anybody, Batman just being silent, and he'll figure this out and do things his own way somewhere through the series here.
I love that. I'm so glad that I picked up on something there, because I felt like there was something there. And yes. With their relationship over the years, it just, that's wonderful.
Yeah. And what I had written in the script was, I asked Ryan to give me, you know, individual panels of each of the Justice League characters saying what it was they had to say. But I said, Batman's mouth is closed. He's silent.
Perfect. So, all right, I'm going to drag us back to Blue Beetle for a minute here. So, because if, for those of you who haven't read the series yet, Dan has wasted no time in creating some new toys and additions to the Blue Beetle mythos that personally I hope stay around forever here. I'm in love here. The Dune Buggy is phenomenal, Dan. You said it on Twitter. It's all about the playset and the vehicles. Does the new buggy have a name? Is there an official name yet?
We think that buggy is good enough.
Okay, that works.
You know, it is a buggy and it's Blue Beetle. And really the credit for this one goes entirely to Ryan. Ryan had done a sketch of like this kind of Volkswagen Baja buggy, you know, like in the Baja 500 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, now that the bug is gone, because we destroyed that in the first issue, how about this as a way to get around? I said, I love this. This is awesome. And as a kid, part of it is because I was always into dune buggies.
Right.
So I just said, push it a little bit more toward the dune buggy realm and we'll get it in the book real quick. And I think in the email chain between me, Ryan, and our wonderful editor, Brittany Holzer, I even said, oh, just think of the playset potential or something like that. And so I got it into the book as a line, along with, you know, the implication of dropping Todd McFarlane's name a little bit.
Right.
And so, you know, I think it fits who they are. And again, it's sort of like having this double layer of fun with the characters, which on the one hand is, yeah, give them a cool car. That should be part of comics. And the other part of it is, well, yeah, you know, why not? Maybe why wouldn't a hero who thinks about the endorsement process always want to have his own action figure? You know, I know a bunch of artists who've gotten comics and always said, all I want is for them to make an action figure of my character, right? You know? So there is that. And another thing that I want to mention here, Shag, is... Yeah. So if we go back and we were considering this series and how we could get it out and when we were going to do it, you know, we were in the depths of the pandemic. And one of the things I said is, look, we got to make this light. People need to be able to laugh here. And I said, comics take themselves so freaking seriously at times. Just let's do a bit of a romp, a buddy film with a couple of guys having fun with a little bit of story wrapped around it. And, you know, that's what it was designed to be. And to kind of fit the sort of oppressive atmosphere that we were dealing with in that time.
Well, you absolutely have nailed your target, because that is a perfect descriptor for how I feel about the book. I'm sitting here with the stupidest, biggest grin on my face looking at the pictures of the buggy right now. The comic's just fun, Dan. So well done. You absolutely achieved your goal.
Well, thank you. And so since everybody will have read it once this comes out, you know, as a bit of a little bit of a plug for number four,
uh-oh.
I mean, you know, this was so much fun to do because really it is... There's a flashback in the book. There are two flashbacks in the book. And what we get is a memory, if you will, or the memories of an adventure. One is told by Blue Beetle through his memory. The other one told by Booster Gold through his memory.
And so you can see where this is going.
Oh, yeah. Blue Beetle's version is drawn by Kevin McGuire. And it's gorgeous. And I did Booster's version. And then we leave it up to Ryan to say, no. Here's what really went down. And a surprise character to step in with that solution. So I think number four will be a lot of fun for people. Just because, you know, here again, we get into the heart of that relationship. And we touch on, you know, their first meeting from Justice League numbers 3 and 4. So we go right back to that. And it's great to see Ryan draw the modern version. And it's great to see Kevin come back and do his version of the characters. Booster has his collar back. So it's great fun.
I saw you had the cape in issue number 3, which was great again. Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. The ceremonial cape. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, Dan, I was wondering how Kevin McGuire was going to fit into that. And that is genius, the way you've laid all that out. That is fantastic.
Thank you.
So another new addition to the Blue Beetle mythos is you've created the character of Buggles. Who
yes.
is sort of like a, I mean, forgive me for the description, but it's a Beatles equivalent of Skeets, for those of you at home who aren't aware. So I'm really getting like an R2-D2 C-3PO vibe from Skeets and Buggles already. I'm hoping, yes. No spoilers, but, you know, are we thinking besties or frenemies? Anything you can say at all?
Well, or is it even more complicated by the fact that Buggles is apparently female?
Right.
So, you know, we have Skeets, who is apparently male, and Buggles, who's apparently female. And what happens with all of that? So, yeah, we have a few curveballs in here.
All right. Now, I'd like you to go on the record here, please, and promise all of us that there is not a super intelligent worm gestating inside Buggles.
100% not an intelligent worm gestating inside Buggles.
All right. Thank you. Whew.
Yeah.
That is a relief. Okay. Now, still talking about Beetle for just another second. You brought back Trixie, or who goes by yeah. Terry now, from the original yeah. Booster Gold series. In fact, I was just rereading the Blue and Gold series last night, and I realized Trixie's in the very first panel in the first issue. Did not even pick up on that at first. But if you could bring back a supporting cast member from the 1980s Blue Beetle series, sort of equivalently, who would you bring back?
Oh, wow. That's a really good question. Out of the two books, and I know this is a bit of a dodge, and I apologize in advance, but out
That's
of the
okay.
two books, you know, I think just given where the business is going, if there were a way to bring back Dirk Davis, who was the agent back in the day, that would be a fun thing to do. But that, I don't know if there's a practical way to ever do that. I think it might be... Well, okay. So just to give another hint of something to come, it wouldn't be unreasonable to assume that there's a place for a Rip Hunter to step into things again here and just
sure.
give us a look at something. So, you know, we definitely are aware of the past that these two lived in, but to a certain degree, you know, not only did they team up in Justice League, but they teamed up, you know, towards the end of Booster Gold Volume 1 with, you know, Ted and Rip both joining the book at that time for a bit. And so I think there are certain themes there when they're together that are more easily picked up on than just, you know, this one from that series, this one from the other series.
Okay. Interesting. I will try and unfold that riddle as time goes on. I look forward to it. So I actually was going to ask you right off the top of your head, nothing more than a yes or no answer, please, because I don't want any spoilers. Obviously, there's a long story there developed about Rip being Booster's son, right? And right. There's the mystery of who Booster's wife is and who Rip's mother is. I don't want to know who it is, obviously. But do you know who the mother is yet?
Yes.
Okay. Wow. So that's interesting. Okay. All right. We'll leave it there, folks, because we don't want to dig anywhere we shouldn't be digging. All right, so getting to the blue and the gold together here. So the whole point of this podcast is to cover the Giffen DeMatteis era of Justice League International from beginning to end.
Now, which was awesome.
It was. It really was. And then you took over Justice League America right after that, after Giffen and DeMatteis left. Now, you wrote the book for a little over a year, and as I understand it, this little tiny thing called Death of Superman disrupted your plans for the JLA title because you became a superstar and had to be on CNN like every other week. So did you have like an overall strategy or like direction in mind where you wanted to take JLA? Any unrealized stories that you weren't able to explore back then?
I wouldn't say that. You know, I got to do some of the things I wanted to do. I was able to do the kind of alternate world Justice League thing that I did where we had Flash in the black costume, for example. That was, you know, the Destiny's Hand story. That was something I had wanted to do.
Everybody. You ask anybody about the Jurgens JLA story, that's the first thing out of their mouth. Destiny's Hand was amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so that was on my mind from the start. You know, using the cosmic vampire, which I love that term, the cosmic vampire. That was something I had wanted to do. So I got to do those things. And the, you know, Superman, I wouldn't say so much that the death of Superman got in the way as much as it caused us to make a couple of adjustments during the course of the story and, you know, not being able to have Superman for a little bit. But at the same time, the story of removing Superman from the League was so damn good for us and allowed us to depend on other characters in the book that it actually ended up being a benefit.
As a fan, I got to say, I was so appreciative to see like Black Condor and Agent Liberty and Ray and everyone else come into the series in that way. It was so cool. And it really set up what they did for the next couple of years with bringing in the task force as a training ground. I mean, it really was a neat way to expand the League.
Yeah, it was. And I really think, you know, Black Condor was a really cool character at the time. And so was the Ray. And so I was very happy to bring those in. There was even a time where I was actually supposed to write and draw the Ray as a new monthly ongoing. It, you know, like so many things, it didn't end up happening. It's amazing how many projects you get attached to and you think you're going to end up doing, like Blue and Gold a couple of times for reasons that just don't happen. But, you know, the Ray was one I was supposed to do. And so I was really cool with the idea of working him into the series. Unfortunately, you know, the other one just didn't happen.
Yeah. So back then you were writing Booster and Beetle together and back in the 1990s. So how would you compare their relationship? And we talked a little bit about how you wrote Beetle back then, but how would you compare Beetle and Booster's relationship as you wrote it 30 years ago to the relationship you're writing about today?
I think if I go back to what it was at that time, because we were just coming out of the 5 years of the Mark and Keith stuff, that they were a little bit more joined at the hip then than they are now. I think because they were in a group setting, that they were more the same character than they are now in Blue and Gold, where I talked earlier about separating them as characters a little bit. And some of that is because if you go back to those times, Booster and Ted were very much the same personalities, right? And it was like those two against the rest of the League at the time. You know, those two would do something stupid and the rest of the League would react. But I didn't detect as much personality difference or don't recall as much personality difference between them as I have to highlight on them now. And some of that is just because now we have more space to do it. Whereas back then, they were two of, you know, 7, 8, or 9, however many it would have been.
No, I totally see that. That's a very fair assessment. And they've both gotten their own chance to have independent series since then, too, and go in different directions and grow as characters as well.
Right.
Yeah. So you just said it a second ago, how you were supposed to work on Blue and Gold before. Yeah, you tweeted about that. You even said, to be clear, this is the third or maybe in the fourth time the project was on your board. The first time going back possibly as far as 1989 or 1988. So can you tell us anything about those previous times or how you got this particular series going?
Yeah, I mean, and again, it's amazing to me as well. I know one time a group of creators and I, you know, we were sitting around together just over beer talking about all the stuff we were supposed to do that never happened. and one of us said, my God, someone should be filming this. This is like a 3-hour documentary. And, you know, so Blue and Gold, the first time it came up was right around the time that Booster Gold Volume 1 was coming to an end. Mm. And it had come up in the halls of the office one day. Well, maybe what we should do is just spin them off, because at that time I just had Ted in the book along with Rip Hunter in the previous few issues. And they said, well, maybe we should just do a Blue and Gold spinoff or something like that. And I said, well, let me do something else for a little bit and then maybe we can get back to it. And I kind of went on to Superman and got caught up in that. And so then it came up again, you know, which is let's do Blue and Gold. And this time we got a little farther with it. And I frankly thought it was going to happen. But again, so many other things came into it and came up that it, and we ended up just not having the time to do it. And then the third time it came up in a conversation between Dan DiDio and me, like probably 4 years ago, where, yeah, you know, maybe we should do Blue and Gold. Maybe the time is right, you know, because we had just joked about it a couple of times previously and we talked about it a little bit and started to say, well, what would it be? And that's kind of what it is. It's not just like all of a sudden Blue and Gold is on the schedule. It's, and nor do I ever like this idea of, right, oh, here's the pitch. I've written it out. You guys either go thumbs up or thumbs down. I think that's a shitty way to create a series. The best way to do it is you have some conversations and you go back and forth. Here's what I'm thinking. What do you guys want? Oh, we thought we wanted this, but now that you say that, we kind of want that. And don't be, you know, jacking around with five different writers to try and come up with your series. Pick one and just have some conversations, develop it together. And so we had a couple of conversations about that. And then, you know, it was late in 2019 that it came up again. And this time we said, okay, let's do it. So we it was actually like November of 19 that we started to move forward with it as though it might happen and really started to talk seriously about it.
So at any point, were you considering drawing it yourself or was there always a plan to bring in another artist?
I think if we went back to 2019, I was playing around with the idea of drawing it myself. Then we, you know, time went by, we had a pandemic going on. And as we started to explore the series and what it might be and how it might have a somewhat different feel than I had initially thought, and I was starting to lean much more into the social media aspects of it, that then I thought, okay, what if we get someone else to draw this? And what happened here is it had gotten mentioned or he either heard about it to Ryan Sook. And Ryan said, gee, I want to draw that. And if someone's going to call me up and said, gee, do you want to work with Ryan? I'm always going to say yes in a heartbeat because I love his work. He puts so much thought into what it is that he's doing that he just totally takes a project and makes it his own. And, you know, he had drawn a couple of things I'd written, an issue of Action Comics, the first issue of Batman Beyond, Rebirth, and he had done all of our covers on Future's End as a weekly. So I had worked with him several times before. And when I found out he was interested, yeah, by all means, please, please come and join us.
So as a writer artist yourself, do you just write a script? Do you do Marvel style? Do you do breakdowns? Like, well, how do you work with Ryan in this type of book?
I write for Ryan, I write a plot. And so it's kind of working Marvel style. And I say, you know, as an artist, if I'm going to work with someone, I say, you don't have to give me a lot. Give me the skeletal structure of the story and let me go nuts. And I give anybody I work with more than that, because I think as a writer, I'm also capable of taking a few notes and going nuts. But on this one, I'm writing a plot and I say to Ryan, if you've got a better idea, tell me about it. If you've got something you want to do that changes the flow for a few pages, go for it. Do what it is that you do best. And I think that's how I bring the best out of artists that I work with. That is, I think, how they get more invested in a project and really put more of their soul into a project. And that's what we're here to do.
Well, I love that a buddy story has a buddy development process for the story, for developing the story. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, it really does. And it's because I have tremendous respect. First of all, I like Ryan a lot as a person. He's a really good guy. But secondly, I have tremendous respect for his creative capabilities and what it is that he can bring to a project, and that he can take it and make something visually his own. I mean, I see so many comics now that have an anonymous feel to them. And part of it is because, you know, editors seem very willing to make an artistic change every 4 or 5 issues or whatever it might be. That with Ryan, you know, he is making something of an individual artistic expression with this book. And I think that's awesome.
Well, I just got to say, Ryan's art is absolutely gorgeous. It's beautiful. It's dynamic. I love the. I think you said it. It's very unique. Like, you look at his style, and it doesn't look like anyone else's, and you can tell it's him. And I'm like, I'm just staring at the cover number 3 with the dune buggy, for example. Like, the dynamism that's on the cover, the art, the expression on their face, the line work. It's just gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah, and he does wonderful human expressions. So when you get to number 4, you know, it's so interesting because you see, you know, Ryan does the first couple of pages and we see wonderful expressive human faces as drawn by Ryan. Then you all of a sudden move into the Kevin Maguire sequence, which is the same thing because that's what Kevin excels at. Mm-hmm. Well, they're very different approaches because they're different artists. And I think it really shows the incredible worth of those two guys working on these characters.
I'm jealous of you people listening that you've already read the issue. So, because I'm dying. So the whole social media aspect of the series is freaking hilarious, man. And the comments of folks, if you haven't read it, it's just, there's all this dialogue going on of people on social media, sort of like Twitter or whatever, you know, giving snarky comments. And Dan, they feel a little too realistic sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
So I got to ask, to help write these online comments, I mean, is this all your own personal experience with social media? Are you like searching through Reddit message boards and YouTube comment threads, like the horrible places to find what people say? I mean, it's dead on.
This is all stuff that I have seen and experienced, and I actually dial it back a little bit here.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, but, you know, I think we all see that and experience it. And you're always going to have the disbelievers and the doubters, like the no matter what, you suck kind of guys, right?
Right. Right.
And you're also going to have the opposite of that, which is the no matter what, he's the greatest, you're a god, you know, type of backers. So you can play around with all of that here. You can even have just the people who answer with an emoji and nothing else, and just do a variety of different things. And in some cases, maybe even add a little honest insight.
Well, I'm picking up on a thread with one of the commenters whose initials are GG, and it's feeling a little bit like a Guy Gardner kind of commentary. Is there something there I'm reading, or am I imagining that?
Well, because this will come out after number 4, you will see that, yes, this is indeed Guy Gardner.
That's amazing. I love it. Yeah. By the way, in case you're wondering, I know sometimes you sneak stuff in to see if the fans notice, and I totally picked up your 0 hour joke in number 1 using the capitalization of 0 and hour. Very clever, sir.
So, thank you.
We've had conversations before about Firestorm where you told me, like, no one noticed that one. So,
right.
So, all right. So the main antagonist, at least where I live in issue 3 so far, has been this character named Omnizon. Or is that how you say that? Omnizon?
Yep, Omnizon.
Okay. So she's this obnoxious space princess. So at any chance earlier in the staging of this scripting, was that ever planned to be Maxima, or am I just seeing something that's not there?
No, although I absolutely love Maxima. No, it wasn't planned to be her. You know, honestly, though, if I had my druthers, I would have worked in Maxima, and I would have worked in fire, and I would have worked in ice. But, you know, to a certain extent, I didn't want to make it all old home week.
Sure.
So I said, all right, we'll make sure we introduce some new stuff. And so I did that with Omnizon. And I think it is good to do that. I try and play fair. I don't want to do this series as something that only harkens back to, say, you know, Booster Gold Volume 1, to Justice League, or to Booster Gold Volume 2 or Blue Beetle, that it's got to be a little more well-rounded than that. And there's a little bit of, you know, fan service that is happening in this book. There's no question. But at the same time, I wanted to appeal to anybody new who might be picking it up and being exposed to these characters for the first time.
Well, it definitely feels like a little bit of old and a little bit of new. Like we said, with the Dune buggy and Omnizon and just the different social media aspect, it feels like it's familiar, but it's definitely pushing something forward into new territory. And that's one of the definite appeals to it.
Right.
So for Booster and Beetle, the appeal of these characters, is part of the appeal their inability to find greatness? Is that part of what makes them interesting? And if they ever became competent, would it ruin what Blue and Gold are?
I think that has a lot going for it as a theory as to why people like them. And I've always felt that way about Booster, because I've said, you know, if I go back to 1984 and 85, when I was putting all this together, at that time, the DC universe, like every hero was perfect. You know, Superman was essentially perfect. Everybody was perfect. And what I wanted to do was a hero who was more human, because he wasn't perfect and he would have faults, and that he would have to work hard to succeed. That, you know, if Superman looks up and a plane is coming down, he flies up, he catches the 747, he carries it out to the airport. Not only does he set it down safely, he puts it right at the exact gate that it was supposed to land. If it was supposed to land at gate 13C, he gets it there. He gets everybody there early so they can go make their connection. Superman is perfect. If it's Booster, he might call CNN and say, hey, I'm going to go do this. You might want to catch it on film because, you know, the world loves it. But he catches the plane. He struggles with it all the way down. The wings clip a couple of office buildings. Jet fuel spills onto the street. The best he can do is land it in the middle of Times Square. You know, no one gets hurt. No one gets killed. But all the people who had a connection miss their connection and they get pissed off at him.
Right.
You know, he does the right thing. But he's not perfect, and he has to work real hard to do it. And I find heroes who aren't perfect inherently more interesting than those that are. That the ones who have to work at it and are still willing to sacrifice in order to get it done are really interesting to me. And that's where, even as the series develops and they talk about, you know, developing this company where they can help people, that is going to be basically, you know, funded by crowdsourcing, still not heroes for hire, you know, that it's because they do want to do the right thing. But is it their fault that they keep getting caught in these really wacky, strange cases? You know, I mean, that's what it would be. And really, I mean, there's your TV series, two heroes trying to help somebody fueled by crowdsourcing who, you know, get called into wacky things, like a woman who's got three vampires in her basement, you know, stuff like that. And I think there's a place for that. And those things, those characters who aren't perfect, they interest me.
I've always kind of likened that to like a Jimmy Stewart kind of situation, where Jimmy Stewart always played kind of the regular flawed character, regular guy in outrageous situations out of his control. Now, to be fair, Beetle and Booster go looking for it, but they are kind of the regular guy. And I think that's part of the appeal, too, is that it could be anybody, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, very much so. And that's where, you know, Ted Kord theoretically has a complete fortune. So that's part of the reason I separated him from that. That, mm-hmm. you know, life gets all of a sudden incredibly easy when you have a fortune behind you. And it's also, you know, I have Booster say things like, you know, I wasn't born a billionaire or millionaire like Batman, however you want to classify it. I can't take a chunk of coal and squeeze it into a diamond. I have to work for what I do. And I think that's realistic. And I think that's, again, part of what makes them unique.
You know, that scene in the beginning where he's saying all that in issue one, where Booster says those lines, you got some of the fans worried that he was streaming at that moment. And they're like, did he just give up Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent's secret identity?
No. I'm always very clear about that. And
yeah.
Nor has he ever called Beetle Ted while they're on screen.
Oh,
because the world does not know. And so we're very careful about that, that when they are streaming, he does not refer to him as Ted.
Perfect. So, all right, I got a strange question for you, a little bit of a random one. So what is like the strangest or most challenging thing that you, as a comic reader, have had to deal with at a comic book convention since the pandemic started?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, to me, I've done three conventions this year.
I know you're at Terrificon because my friend Dr. Ange got you to sign a copy of Blue and Gold number one for me, which is sitting right here.
Yeah, I was at Terrificon. That was fun. And then things were pretty relaxed. And then more recently here, I did Motor City Con in Detroit, which was 3 days. And when we did Terrificon, you know, most of us, I wore a mask here and there, but when it got uncomfortable, I could take it down. And most of the people who were there were not masked up. Mm-hmm. That was in August. We thought we had, you know, beat this thing into submission.
Right, right.
But when I did Motor City Con in Detroit here just a couple of weeks ago in October, you know, at that time it was back, okay, everybody, you know, has to mask up. And it is, you know, really uncomfortable to sit there all day long in a mask because it's so hard to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to understand people. It's hard for them to understand me. So, but I think it is so good to have conventions back. and to have people together again and indulging in this great thing we call comics, that it was worth it.
Well, I've been very excited to see conventions back. I have got to the local one here myself, but I haven't traveled to any of the big ones yet. And I'm looking forward to hopefully that in the near future.
Yeah, and I got to say, all of the three I have done, they've all been handled well with additional spacing and that sort of conscientious attitude about what it is, what we have to be, with a lot of signage that's up, encouraging people to be masked up, hopefully have had a vaccination. I know there have been other cons that require proof of vaccination. And the one thing I have responded really, really well to is the wider aisles and the more space between tables. And I thought, hey, this is nice. And you can see people walking around and they're more relaxed just because they aren't, you know, shoulder to shoulder trying to fight their way through the crowds. And a lot of us have been saying, I don't know the economics behind that, how viable it is, but I hope that's what conventions are going forward, that we should not be packing these aisles so full of people that they can't turn around and they can't get to tables to look at the stuff they want to look at. And so they're much less claustrophobic, which has made them more relaxed and easy to sit through. Because seriously, if it's a 3 or 4 day show, and I know it's not exactly, you know, working down in a mine 300 feet below the surface digging rocks, but it's sitting there with that sort of sense of claustrophobia going on all day. It gets wearing after a couple of days. So I kind of appreciate the efforts of the promoters and what they've done to give us and the fans more space.
And, you know, as an attendee, too, I mean, that's a similar sort of concept. It's like, you know, whenever I think about going to a convention, I think about, okay, how much of a herding cattle kind of situation is it to walk down the aisles and talk to somebody and engage with somebody? And yeah, so that's really refreshing to hear that the wider aisles are making a comeback. And I hope they're here to stay as well.
I do. And I think everybody would say that. And again, I don't know the economics, but I think it is certainly just makes for a more relaxing experience. And everybody I talk to will back that up. The fans liked it more. The retailers liked it more. The guests liked it more. So everybody has responded well to that. It's like, oh, yeah, it does. You know, you have a lot of people here, but it isn't the jam-packed sea of humanity where people can't turn around. And that's been good to see.
Mm. All right. Well, looking forward to more conventions in the future. But now, Dan, it is time for our lightning round. This is where I'm going to give you 5 seconds on the clock, sir. And you're going to have to answer each question rapid fire.
Okay. Shot clock buzzer on.
All right. First question. If you had to build a love triangle for Booster and Beetle, who would be the love interest that they're fighting over?
Oh, it's got to be Fire, Ice, or Maxima to start with. I think Maxa, because she would dominate them both.
I think you're right. So, all right. So, Ben Reilly is back as Spider-Man after all these years. So, please finish this sentence. While writing for Spider-Man in the mid-1990s, you were told the one true Spider-Man was...
Ben Reilly.
All right.
It didn't end up being that way, but at one time, and I think this has been documented elsewhere, yeah, that was going to be the deal.
Yep, that's what we always hear, so it's good to get confirmation. So, which of Superman's villains is the biggest lovable loser?
Ooh, which is Superman's biggest villain? Gosh, I'd have to think about that a bit, but I've only got 5 seconds. There's something about Toy Man that sort of fits that category.
Until he murders children.
And I just was thinking about that. We might have to roll with the pranks, although, you know, it's... Gosh, who else always has trouble? Parasite, I think, to a certain extent also fits because he has gone through so many versions of who he is, right? It's like Parasite looks like this. No, he looks like that. And pretty soon you don't have an identity. So I'm going to say Parasite.
That works. And he's absolutely gross to look at. So yes. It works all the way around. All right. So in a race, who would win? Speed Buggy from the Hanna-Barbera cartoons or Beatles Buggy?
Was Speed Buggy the sentient buggy?
It was.
I'll give it to Speed Buggy because if Beetle's buggy loses, he's not going to cry. Speed Buggy would, so we'll give it to Speed Buggy.
Fair enough. You have a kind heart, Mr. Juergens.
Thank you.
So if you had to start an entirely new career, what would you do?
Oh, geez. What would I do? You know, I'd be a critic. I'd be a comic critic because I'd get online and blast the hell out of every creator doing comics because we've all been subject to that. So eventually I would probably do a reverse engineering thing where all the critics get to be creators and finally get to prove they don't know what they're doing. And I would then get to sit there and point the finger. How's that?
I like it. I like it quite a bit. I was thinking you were going to say, like, I know your love of sports. I was figuring a Steve Lombard sort of thing, but your answer is so much better. Oh, my God. So, all right. Do you own any superhero pajamas?
I do not.
Get on it, Dan. Come on. Christmas is around the corner, man.
Yeah, I guess.
All right. So here's the situation. I'm putting you in a situation. You see someone struggling in a swimming pool. Now, you're a good guy, so you're going to jump in the pool and help them. But first, you're going to take out of your pocket your wallet and your cell phone so they don't get ruined in the pool, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you turn to the people next to you to hand them your wallet and cell phone as you jump in the pool. But standing there are Dirk Davis and Funky Flashman. What do you do?
I'm going with Funky because Dirk Davis was a manhunter. And so, you know, Dirk Davis was hell-bent on killing people. Funky Flashman was just a con artist. So I'll go with the con artist.
Fair enough. You're going to lose your money either way, but that's
yeah,
fair.
Yeah, exactly right.
All right. True or false, a Beatles new drone, the Buggle, is a tribute to the UK pop musical group who famously performed Video Killed the Radio Star.
No, actually, so where it all started is Ryan did this little sketch of a potential new droid for the Beatle and just wrote Bubbles underneath it. And let's call him Bubbles. And I said, no, not Bubbles, Buggles. So that's it right there in a nutshell.
Perfect. All right, so with the wide usage of the DC Infinite app nowadays, which I'm a huge fan of, by the way, would you please name one older title of yours that you would invite people to rediscover or try for the first time if they missed it?
Oh, I would say as good. I think the Triangle era of Superman is singular, neat, unique, and so worth the tag that I want to go there, but I won't. And instead, I'm going to cite the Green Arrow stuff that I did with Mike Grell. And, Ed Hannigan and I were sort of co-artists on the book because we were shipping more than 12 issues a year for a couple of years. And I think Mike and what he was doing on that book was very unique. And at the time, it was a unique book. And it did really pretty well. But I would say that.
Good call. Excellent choice. And last question on the lightning round. What is the most unusual thing that you've been asked to autograph?
Well, I'm a human being.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Was it one of those where that you autograph and then they go get it tattooed, or?
I was told that was going to be part of it, and I said, okay.
All right.
I just find that idea of autographing a human being to be eminently strange.
Keeping it clean, was it at least a part of the body that would be okay in that area?
It ended up being that, yes.
Okay. All right, Dan, congratulations. You have survived the lightning round.
Okay.
So, Blue and Gold, 8-issue miniseries. Looks like it's going to run through March. Have you heard anything about a collected edition yet?
I would imagine there will be one. I haven't been asked about that yet definitively, but I would be shocked if there weren't going to be one. So, yeah, hopefully people can be looking for that somewhere down the road.
Awesome. And we're all hoping for further adventures of Blue and Gold. Fingers crossed. So, we will watch solicits for that.
Yeah, that would be great. And in the meantime, starting fairly soon, you'll see quite a wide variety of cover work that I've been doing for Marvel, including the aforementioned, the new Ben Reilly Spider-Man series that's coming out. Yeah.
I saw some of those on, I think, Twitter or that you posted. Those look amazing.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun to get back to it. And it's actually always unique to say all of a sudden, you know, here we are. It's almost, so that was 95, you know, it's almost 30 years after the fact. And here I am doing Ben Reilly again. So it's, you know, it's good to have a long career.
I do wonder, you know, what sort of secret deal you made with Mephisto or whatever the DC, you know, Satanus or whatever that's gotten you so much work over the years with DC. I'm not asking, but I do think about it from time to time.
Well, yeah, I hope the deal doesn't break because it's been fun and it's been rewarding.
So as we wrap here, would you please tell the folks at home why they should be picking up the Blue and Gold miniseries if they're not already?
Because I think that one of the more popular aspects of film always has been the buddy film. And I think we've seen it on TV as well, where there's this certain affinity that I think many of us have for two guys thrown together in a TV series or whatever, you know, Starsky and Hutch. I don't care whatever it is, but I think that's a real viable form of fiction that we have not done enough with in comics. And I've always been amazed by that. You have certain buddy tandems that we know about. This one is about DC's, I think, preeminent buddy tandem, because we keep seeing Superman and Batman and they don't appear to be very close.
Right.
Depending on who's writing it. So this is Blue Beetle and Booster Gold in what is something of a romp. And they're there. And it's just designed to be a fun read and something that is a little bit different than a lot of the other stuff on the stands. I think that as we get caught up more and more in big, you know, dramatic stories, what is this? It's the crisis of this, the, you know, infinite war of that, that I think there's a place for something like this, which is about two guys having fun adventures that intercrosses with a lot of social media and takes us to the point at the end of the series, which I think does make a statement about some things that have come before and sets us up for something to come next.
Well, folks, I can't give it my high enough endorsement. It is so incredibly good. It's this lover of the old JLI. It warms my soul. And I'm not somebody who reads a lot of new comics, folks. So I am really, really enjoying this. So I wholeheartedly endorse it. So thank you so much for all your time today, Dan.
My pleasure, as always.
All right, that's going to do it, folks. Now come back next episode when we return you to your regular monthly coverage. We'll be covering Justice League America number 43 and Justice League Europe number 19. Thanks for listening, everybody. Until next time, I'm Shag.
And I'm Dan Jurgens.
And you've been listening to the JLI Podcast.
Want to make something of it?